Good afternoon. My name is Catherine Dorr from Minneapolis, Minnesota. This is my first time here. Thank you for hosting this meeting today. With the political and financial and corporate developments since September 11th, I am thankful every day that persons of your integrity and the managers that you have are still managing my inheritance money. And I believe that the character and integrity is the most important criteria. I can sleep well at night. I have two questions. The first one is for Mr. Munger. When will there be a permanent store location, not a cart, of See's Candies at the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota? This is the largest indoor shopping mall, I believe, in the country, and hosts thousands of domestic and foreign visitors each year. A hint, you can sell See's Candies to other nationalities when they visit us. Also, is it possible for Costco stores to sell See's Candies? Since Mr. Munger has a shareholder interest in Costco, I would be interested in his answer. We could sell related products in our system. And I'll wait for his answer to ask the second question to Mr. Buffett.
The short answer to your questions is that under our decentralized system, decisions of that kind go rightly to the person in charge of C's, who's here, Chuck Huggins. He may not be here through this afternoon session. He may have some limited interest, but Chuck can answer those questions. He knows a lot about candy.
We have a Helzberg. We do have a Helzberg's at Mall of America, though. Incidentally, we have a Helzberg's operation at Mall of America, which does fine. And I would add, we have not done as well moving away from the West as Charlie and I might have. Well, certainly as well as we hoped for when we originally bought C's. I mean, we've done way better in terms of the overall result, but it has been interesting to us. Now, bear in mind, no one really makes any money with box chocolates through their own retail outlets in the United States except for C's. I mean, there's only 1 pound per capita of box chocolates, roughly, sold in the United States. I'm told I gave the wrong figure. I said 64 ounces per year on people drinking. You really don't look like you only drink 64 ounces of liquid a year. It was a day. But on this one, it is 1 pound per capita per year on boxed chocolates. So it is not a big business. It's not a business. Well, the truth is, hundreds and hundreds of firms, including some that were a lot larger than C's, have failed, and there really is no one making any money elsewhere. Russell Stover makes very good money selling through a distribution channel that is different. But nobody's found a way to do it in stores. We've found a way to do it in the West. We have not found a way to do it elsewhere. And it's very irritating to me and to Chuck, as far as that's concerned, and that we can't figure out a way, because it's so successful when it works, as it does in the West. But the answer is, you can look at Archibald Candy. The bonds are selling for 50. They own Fannie Farmer and Fannie Mae and Laura Secord up in Canada. And it is a very tough business in this country, because Americans just don't buy much boxed chocolate. They're always happy to get it as a gift. Everybody in this room would love to get a gift of it, and they may buy it when they're here, but you don't normally walk down the street or walk in a mall and buy it for yourself. It's usually a gift, or it's usually at holiday time. So we don't do as well as you might think we would when we get to very successful malls that are located in other parts of the country. We have opened holiday shops, kiosks really, at 50 stores at Christmas time around the country, away from our natural territory. And we make some money out of that, but we wouldn't make money if we were there year round. And we've been thinking about it, I'll guarantee you, for 30 years, because it's a terrific business where it works. And it's a very good question you ask, because you would think I mean, Mall of America is an obvious example. Simon would be tough to deal with, the landlord, but we could figure out a way to do that. And the but you would think we could make money at a Mall of America, and we do fine with Ellsberg's there. But I'm not positive a candy store would work, but we may try one just because you asked the question. Well, I'll talk to Chuck about it.
Okay.
How about Costco?
My second
Costco.
Question.
Costco makes its own decisions, and so does C's, and I wouldn't think of getting into that one.
Oh. Well, I'll get into it. We don't want people discounting our candy. It's very simple. Any more than Rolex wants somebody discounting their watches. And we will not, we're not going to go through any distribution channel at C's. We're already getting a bargain at our retail prices. And we're not going to go through any other distribution channel at C's that's going to discount. And Costco has no interest, and I don't blame them. I mean, they are based on giving people special prices. And that's fine, and God bless them. And, you know, we'll buy things from Costco, but we're not going to sell a product where the price is part of the integrity of the product. We're not going to sell it through a distribution system that where discounting is basic to their whole approach. Costco is a wonderful operation, and C's is a wonderful operation, and never the twain shall meet.
Very logical. My second question is to Mr. Buffett. Since I am a new shareholder, and because this is my first attendance here, I am not sure if this question has been asked before or not. And if it is addressed in your publications, I may have overlooked it, so please bear with me. This is on the relationship between the A and the B shares. On page one of the booklet, it states, quote, "Each share of Class A stock is entitled to one vote per share, and each share of Class B stock is entitled to 1/200th of one vote per share," close quote. Calculating the voting weight per share would therefore be 200 Class B shares equaling one vote equally weighted of one Class A share. However, the Class B share price is 1/30th, traditionally, of a Class A share. Given that the B share owners are purchasing into the same corporation and assets as the A share owners, and the cash is just as green no matter which share you buy, therefore, it would be logical that the voting weight and price relationship of the shares be proportional all around, either 1/30th or 1/200th of pricing and voting weight, respectively. The question, therefore, is why are the B shares not given voting weight of 1/30th instead of 1/200th? Or conversely, why the B shares are not priced at 1/200th of an A share? This may or may not be popular depending on which share you own. And I would appreciate your insight on that.
Yeah, thank you. It's a good question. You may not be aware of the history of the issuance, but we issued the B shares. There were no, I mean, they're just a common share, so we renamed the old shares A shares. But we issued the B shares, whatever it was, what, 7 or 8 years ago, Charlie? Something like that. And we did that in response to some people, particularly a fellow in Philadelphia, who we felt was going to induce people who really didn't understand Berkshire at all into a terribly expensive way of owning tiny pieces of Berkshire, probably sold on the basis of an historical record that we did not think was representative of what could be incurred in the future. In other words, we were disturbed by somebody who saw a chance to make a lot of money off of people who were really uninformed, using our stock as the vehicle, and we were going to reap the unhappiness of those people. Subsequently, they're going to run into tax problems and various administrative cost problems and so on. So to ward that off, and only to ward that off, I mean, we issued the B stock, which effectively put that fellow out of business because it was a better vehicle for doing what he was going to try and get people to do at great profit for himself. And when we issued it, it had not existed before, and we put two differences in it from the A stock. A, we wanted to create a lower value per share, so we did it on a 1/30th basis. At the time, it was around $1,100 or thereabouts because the A was selling for in the low 30,000. But we put on the prospectus, which is a very unusual prospectus in other respects, we put on that we were going to differentiate the stock in only two ways. But we were going to differentiate it in those two ways. And one was the voting power, because we didn't want to issue the stock and we didn't want to change the voting situation much. And the second way was in terms of the designated charitable contributions, which the A was going to continue to enjoy and the B would not participate in. And the reason the B wasn't going to participate in it is because the amounts would have gotten to a point where that would have been an administrative nightmare. I mean, this year we designated $18 on the A shares. We've got a lot of one-share B holders, which would be 60 cents, and it just doesn't make any sense. And we saw that. So we just said, if you buy the B shares, you're buying into an instrument which economically is equal to 1/30th of an A. In voting, it is not equal to 1/30th of an A because we don't want to change the voting that much. And it has a slight economic difference in terms of the fact it doesn't get to participate in the charitable contributions program, which is a very small item relative to the whole capitalization, but it's still something. But we do not, you'll notice our A and B, compared to other companies that have different voting arrangements, I was just looking at one the other day where the premium for the voting stock is 10 or 12% or something like that relative to economic interest. That's because people assume that if the company's ever sold or anything like that, the guy that owns the A will get treated better than the B. And Charlie and I have been in a situation where we got somewhat taken because of a relationship like that. We will treat the B exactly as the A, except for those two things, which at the time of issuance we set out as being differences. Those two items everybody saw coming into the picture, and they're going to stay. They will stay as part of the picture. In terms of when the meeting will be held 2 years from now, we aren't even going to vote by votes in a sense. I mean, I'm going to get a sense of what people want to do, but I regard, in that respect, I think that it ought to be the most convenient for the most people, not for the most number of shares. A will not vote any different than B or anything because. You're all individual people, and I want whatever works best for the most. But in terms of those two other items, they were set out that way, and they'll stay that way. If we'd set out a different, we would not change the relationship the two stocks once they were issued. We would not benefit one relative to the other. But those are the terms of the two, Charlie.
Yeah, we had to issue the B stock to frustrate the ambitions of this jerk promoter. And yet we didn't want to split the A stock down to all of it down to tiny little fractions, which would have frustrated him but forced us to have a stock split we didn't want. So we created a vehicle which had these two slight disadvantages, and that kept most of our capitalization in its traditional A stock and also frustrated the promoter. It's an historical quirk. It's an accident of life.
And the B is sold at a remarkably consistent relationship to the A. The discount got as low as, or as high, I should say, as I think it was over 4% for a small period of time. But it's, generally speaking, the B is sold at parity to very slightly below parity. And indeed, A shares get converted to B, and that would not happen unless the B were at parity. I think it's worked out pretty well. I mean, we backed into it, but I don't think anybody's been disadvantaged by it.